Thank you, Ron, very much for the introduction. And understand if I seem to be as wound up as an eight-day clock, I am. If I act like a cat on a hot tin roof, the old line, I am. Very shortly, we'll begin the process to work our way through the House Ag Committee's version of the 2013 Farm Bill. Some of you sat in those chairs and listened to those things last year when we started at 10 o'clock one morning and went a little after 1 o'clock the next morning before we finished. I don't necessarily believe this markup will take that long, but I would note for you, we had approximately 100 amendments a year ago. As of this morning, we have approximately 100 amendments this time. It's my hope that perhaps a quarter of those amendments, and the details are being put together, can be addressed in an en bloc fashion. I would suspect there's about a quarter of those amendments that perhaps will be offered by my dear colleagues and maybe withdrawn without a request for a vote. But that still leaves us about half of that 100 amendments to be dealt with. So it might be a long day. And mechanically add on top of that the fact that we will recess from 3 o'clock for a two-hour House Republican conference dealing with the deficit ceiling issue. Have a series of votes after that, and in return, I think you can say from 3:30 to 6:30, you have some time to do whatever you need to do. But at 6:30, we'll begin again, and we'll finish whenever that happens. Now, that said, a few more quick thoughts, and then maybe a thought or two if you'd care to have anything you want to discuss. This process we're in, there are a lot of differences between now and last year, even if it is the same number of amendments. Consider for a moment that last year half the Ag Committee was new to the process. Maybe they weren't freshmen, but they'd not served on the Ag Committee before. That number's like 20% this time. That makes a huge difference. I think we had a very positive markup a year ago using regular order, allowing every member the opportunity to present, discuss, and if so requested, vote on their amendment. I think that generated a lot of positive legislative goodwill. We'll go with that goodwill into this process this morning. I think the bill in many ways, other than achieving a greater level of savings, some of that mandated by the way CBO looked at our scores, some of it just mandated by the realities of the environment we're in, I think our bill is going to be something we can be extremely proud of, whether it's the approximately $20 billion in savings in the nutrition title through very straightforward, understandable, logical reforms, or the $18 billion approximately in savings in the rest of the bill. Now, there'll be some folks out in the countryside who will say, Frank, 80% of the bill is saving $20 billion, and 20% of the bill is saving $18 billion. How can that be fair? Well, I think if you look back all the way to 1996, this is the first real reform in the nutrition title in almost 20 years. That says something about the effort we're engaged in. Now, we'll still have choice. We'll still have a bill that all regions and all commodity groups can participate in. We'll still have some differences to work out with our friends in the United States Senate when we conclude our work on the floor, of course. And by the way, my understanding is we'll be on the floor in June, both by comments of leadership to me and their public notices or listings they've given the membership. That's a dramatic improvement over a year ago, knowing I'll go to the floor. But I'd say this also, whatever we do in the committee, many of the battles, whether it is over dairy or sugar or the size of the nutrition reforms, will be fought out again on the floor of the United States House, whatever happens in committee. I understand that. I think most of my committee members understand that. But it's a struggle we're prepared to engage in, and we're prepared to move forward on. And with that, my friends, quick question or two, and then I'm going to go spend time with my friends in conference, and then we'll fire this process up.
With regard to the plan that they approved yesterday and the one that you know where you want to be at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
Who chairs the conference, and how do you see the conference with the House and the Senate?
Under the customary procedures we operate in this place, the chairmanship of the conferences on major bills move back and forth between the two bodies. Chairman Harkonnen chairman of the Ag Committee of the United States Senate, Harkin, last time chaired the conference committee. So it's the House's turn to chair the conference this time. Where do we go? Well, as soon as the Senate can clear the floor, and there are rumors they may move rather quickly before I can secure time on the floor in June, as soon as we finish our work on the floor, then we begin those famous discussions called pre-conference and see what we can achieve as we move towards then the calling of the formal conference and forward. But I would say this. I got here in time to study the old bulls in the 103rd Congress. I've observed a lot of chairmen, men and women, in my time since then, too. This might be a short conference, and it might be a long conference. But it's a conference that ultimately will achieve consensus on, and all commodity groups and all regions, I think, will be pleased with what we'll do. Yes, ma'am. Hooray.
Any changes you anticipate for special crops?
Not dramatically. We've incorporated most of the work of the committee last year. We'll see what's offered up today and how the membership responds. Specialty crops are important. They'll have a place in this bill. It's one of those issues where kind of like a variety of other things, if I had some new money to work with, we'd do a lot more. And I've told many of you this before, privately and publicly both, how I had the good fortune to be a chairman when not only do I not, the resources I have to work with, not only do I not have any old money, well, I should say this, I don't have any new money, I don't have any old money, I have less money, and it makes it all ever so tough. And the savings from ending the direct payment program can only go so far. And we're going to try.
On crop insurance, means test and conservation compliance. And should conservation compliance be adjusted? You've got 1,000 acres and you're out of compliance on 2 acres, you lose on all acres.
Well, first, bear in mind, from my perspective, the underlying principle on all these issues is a farm bill a document to make sure we have enough food and fiber? Or is the farm bill a document so as to allow people here in D.C. and lobbyists here in D.C. to decide how farmers live their life and practice their businesses across the country? I personally believe a farm bill is still a document that raises food and fiber that meets the needs of consumers here and around the world. So philosophically, that's where I come from. What will the final document be? I can't say yet. Clearly, the Senate has taken some stronger positions on those kind of issues than I have. But no, you shouldn't penalize somebody for an accidental or an incidental circumstance that impacts their entire operation. But there are advocates in the hallways up here who are so focused on trying to use this bill to guide every move of every farmer on every occasion, they would tie it all into a straitjacket. I don't agree with that, but we'll see. Ultimately, there's a compromise that has to be done in the end. And then we'll come back to Mr. Root. Oh, I would expect, of course, there will be amendments both in committee and on the floor. But in a year where the biggest focus, even going all the way back to the super committee process, was saving money, saving money, saving money, there's nothing that changing federal sugar policy would do that would actually generate an extra penny for the Treasury. So I have a hard time getting excited about that. Ken.
Sir, do you see if target prices are going to
Well, I think the Senate showed some flexibility in starting us in the direction of where producers will have choice. ARC or shallow loss revenue just won't work for everybody. And you've got to have a means that everyone can be a part of the process. I know some of my friends, my very dearest friends, criticize the concept of price protection, and they use that old phrase, target price. But I tell you quite simply, look at what's gone on in the last 5 years. What's changed more planting decisions? What's driven more cropping decisions? It's not an ag committee program. It's the renewable fuel standard. It's ethanol. We planted the most corn last year since 1937. And if we'd not had a drought, how much corn would we have had? This year, USDA says if the ground will dry up everywhere, we'll plant the most corn since 1936. I don't think that you can say with a straight face that the second part of our option is what's going to drive planning decisions. Planning decisions are being clearly driven by something outside the Agriculture Committee. And I'll go one step farther to say the danger we face in rural America right now is a combination of two things that the Ag Committee has no control over. No control over. One is all the money from the three quantitative easings that have flowed out in and been invested in farmland and helped to drive up the prices. The other is the marketing decisions based on the renewable fuel standard. That's what's creating, I think, some long-term danger out there. What happens if we have one or two or three good years of perfect weather to grow corn? Most corn since 1936, and they're not using A and B John Deere tractors anymore with two-row planters. What happens? I think that's the issue we need to be concerned about. But right now, the committee only has jurisdiction over the matters that it has jurisdiction over, and we're going to try and create the best safety net we can by giving producers choice to address whatever's over the hill. Because remember, farm bills are not necessarily about this year or next year or year three. Farm bills are about making provisions for year four or year five, when the wheels come off, when everybody produces around the world, or when foreign demand collapses, or when circumstances we can't even imagine occur. Or as we've seen now going on our third year in much of the Southwest, Mother Nature decides to turn the water off. Those are the issues that farm bills are about. I'd conclude by saying this, my good friends, and I'm going to slide out the door to go to conference. My ranking member has been a pleasure to work with. Colin is a very determined fella who knows exactly what he wants to do and is a very strong advocate. He's been a great ally. We have had to compromise in a number of areas to achieve consensus. But you know, that's not necessarily such a bad thing. I think we have a very solid farm bill moving forward. We have to move it across the floor with a successful conclusion of a committee markup today through a very challenging environment. I think we'll get there. In spite of my friends on the left in the United States House who don't want to spend any money on rural America, and my friends on the right who don't want to spend any money on anybody on any occasion for any reason, we'll still achieve that consensus of the middle, and we'll make sure that not only the folks in the countryside have that safety net they need, but we'll also assure our friends who may not necessarily understand where their food comes from, we'll assure them a safe supply, a safety net, a certainty there. We might not get credit for it from the great American consumers, but they'll benefit as they have from every farm bill since the passage of the very first one in 1933.